You're listening to Agriculture Today.
As of March 1st, in feedlots with a capacity of over 1,000 head, there was 11.55 million cattle in those feedlots, which is fractionally lower than a year ago.
That's USDA livestock analyst Michael McConnell.
During the month of February, 1.61 million head of cattle were placed in those feedlots, which was 4% higher than a year ago, and 1.52 million cattle were marketed from those feedlots, which is 7% lower than a year ago.
Those are numbers from the latest Cattle on Feed report, but on Tuesday, USDA out with the cold storage report showing inventory sending mixed signals across livestock and food markets with tighter red meat supplies, but larger poultry and dairy movements. Now, the latest report shows total red meat supplies down 5% from a year ago, including a 5% decline in both beef and pork stocks. Pork belly inventory is an exception, up 5% month to month, though still below last year. Natural cheese stocks slightly higher than January, but down 1% year over year. Butter inventories up 12% from last month, but still compared to last year, down 17%. USDA promoting a stricter product of USA label standard to improve transparency and strengthen demand for domestically produced meat, poultry, and eggs. Voluntary labeling rule took effect January 1st, requires that animals be born, raised, harvested, and processed in the U.S. to qualify. Now, the announcement made by Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins on National Ag Day, accompanied by a national awareness campaign to increase understanding among producers and consumers. Updated standard replaces prior guidance that allowed imported products to carry the label after just minimal processing. USDA says the change designed to align labeling with consumer expectations and ensure that producers investing in fully domestic supply chains can compete more fairly. Move comes as U.S. livestock sector faces structural challenges. USDA notes the loss of more than 100,000 farms since 2017. Alongside that, the cattle herd at a 75-year low, but beef demand has actually increased over the past decade. But parts of rural America tied to row crop production showing recession-like conditions. That even as the broader U.S. economy continues to expand. USDA data showing farm incomes pulled back from recent highs with lower crop receipts and tighter margins weighing on operations. Federal Reserve District reports from Chicago, Kansas City, and Minneapolis all point to weaker farm earnings, rising loan demand, and increased financial stress in crop-heavy regions. Farm bankruptcies also increased in 2025, signaling a deeper strain in some operations. Lower commodity prices combined with still elevated input costs, though, squeezing profitability, particularly for corn, soybean, and wheat producers. Now, that pressure is filtering through rural economies, impacting equipment purchases, land rents, and local agribusiness activity tied to farm spending. And the farm-level takeaway here is crop margins remain the key pressure point. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Again, the big key for me has been the export line, where we're continuing to stare at looking at a setting a record there as well in terms of export sales to the rest of the world.
Chad Hart is an Iowa State University ag economist looking at corn and soybeans and the outlook based on recent USDA projections.
But overall, they're still saying that, you know, production has exceeded demand, and so we're seeing stocks build and prices under pressure. Looking forward to 2026, we see less corn being planted, but still producing a very large crop, and hopefully flipping this equation around a little bit, where usage will be more than production, allowing those stocks to tighten back up and giving us more room for price growth out there. And I would say the market is definitely leaning in that direction. When it comes to the soybean market, again, sort of steady as she goes. The one change that was made here was there was an additional 5 million bushels added to our imports, so bringing in soybeans from other parts of the world, which they immediately then turned around and said we have 5 million more being used in domestic crush. So overall, it did not change the balance that we see within the supply and use table, that we're still talking about, in this case, production being equal to usage here, helping maintain stock levels roughly where they were. And that has kept prices in sort of a range-bound position here over the last couple of years. Now, that said, as we're looking forward into 2026 plantings, we are expecting to see a few more acres of soybean here, and I think that's especially the case as we look now at what's happening with the, let's call it the aftershocks of the Iran war, and how that has heightened energy and fertilizer prices, key here. And so as we look at those higher fertilizer prices, that does tend to push some producers to move a little more acreage into soybean. So we're looking at a bigger soybean crop being projected for this coming year, but we're also looking for more usage with that as well. And so again, sort of maintaining that balance as we look out there. And USDA is expecting prices to still remain in the low $10 range, but the markets have moved higher since then, betting on, I think, a combination of continued usage growth, along with the possibility maybe that we'll see some smaller crops moving forward. So when we're looking at the worldwide situation, it is, you know, sort of similar to the U.S. one, that worldwide production has been at record levels for some time now. But we did see USDA update the outlook, especially as we look down to South America, where they see drought conditions basically pulling down on that Argentine crop, but they do expect maybe that being offset by what we're seeing in a better Brazilian crop. It's still a smaller crop than last year for Brazil, but a little bit better than we had expected. Along with that, there's some more growth in the Black Sea region, especially in Ukraine. We're seeing more crop there, and that's going to mean more export competition for U.S. corn as we look around the globe. In the case of the soybean market, very few changes here, but probably the biggest one of note would be, again, in the Argentina area, we are seeing hot, dry weather pulling down on their crop production here. It caused a little slip in their soybean production there. So when we're looking at global soybean supplies, this year and last year, roughly the same size crop. And that's one of the rare times where I get to talk about the lack of growth in global soybean production.
Chad Hart, Iowa State. It's Agriculture Today.
Introducing the heavyweight champion of the livestock operation, Case IH Farmall Utility Series Tractors. Farmall Utility Tractors don't just outweigh the competition. They're engineered to distribute weight where it works, from the transmission, central housing, and axles to the differentials and final drives. So add some weight to your operation and go the distance with Farmall Utility Tractors.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
with Agriculture Today. Here's Tony St. James.
Total federal debt now exceeds $38.6 trillion.
Matt Erickson is with Terrain.
The federal government is currently running at an annual deficit of roughly $1.8 trillion, or about 6% of GDP. According to the Congressional Budget Office, annual deficits are projected to rise above $3.1 trillion by 2036. Put simply, in 2026, the federal government is spending about $106 for every $100 the economy produces. Historically, financial markets have been more comfortable when deficits are closer to 3% of GDP, a level generally viewed as consistent with stabilizing the debt burden relative to the size of the economy. One stated objective of the administration's 3-3-3 plan is to move in that direction by reducing the deficit to 3% of GDP, while targeting 3% real GDP growth and increasing domestic oil production by 3 million barrels per day. The challenge with running deficits near 6% of GDP during a period of steady growth is that the Treasury must continuously issue large volumes of bonds to fund the gap. Greater supply typically requires higher yields to attract buyers. Moreover, U.S. debt is increasingly being absorbed by private domestic investors who demand higher returns, pushing domestic ownership levels not seen in more than 20 years. This helps explain why the 10-year Treasury yield has remained elevated despite moderating inflation. Higher long-term yields ripple through the economy, influencing mortgage rates, corporate borrowing costs, and equity valuations. Reducing the deficit from roughly 6% of GDP to 3% would require closing a budget gap of about $1.2 trillion per year, on average, over the next decade at current baseline GDP levels. That adjustment could come through spending restraint, higher revenues, or faster economic growth. But growth alone would need to accelerate meaningfully and remain well above trend to close the gap without fiscal changes. Through 2030, nominal GDP would need to average around 19% growth for the deficit to GDP ratio to fall to 3%. In short, until deficits move materially closer to 3% of GDP, upward pressure on long-term interest rates is likely to remain a structural feature of the macroeconomic backdrop. For the Fed, this environment presents a policy complication, particularly as new leadership is expected sometime in 2026 following congressional approval. Even if the Fed moves to ease policy, heavy Treasury issuance can keep longer-term yields elevated, effectively doing some of the tightening for the Fed and limiting how accommodative monetary policy can ultimately become. My analysis of the 10-year Treasury yield using quarterly data dating back to 1992 reinforces the view that movements with long-term rates are driven more by expectations and risk premiums than by macroeconomic data alone. Inflation expectations remain a dominant driver, while the 2-year Treasury yield, capturing market expectations for the future path of monetary policy, continues to exert a powerful influence on long-term rates. At the same time, shifts in the term premium play a central role. They reflect uncertainty around inflation, growth, and future policy, as well as changes in risk appetite and bond supply. Notably, year-over-year S&P 500 returns also emerge as a statistically meaningful factor over this long sample. Strong equity returns tend to coincide with higher long-term Treasury yields, consistent with periods of robust risk appetite, stronger growth expectations, and reduced demand for safe haven assets. Conversely, weaker equity performance is often associated with lower long-term yields as investors rotate towards Treasuries.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton, to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So the Farmer Bridge Assistance, we actually kicked that off on the 23rd of February with a lot of interest, certainly from producers across the country.
Richard Fordyce is the Undersecretary for Farm Programs and Conservation at USDA on the FBA program, the Farmer Bridge Assistance Program.
The Farmer Bridge Assistance is a bridge to get to the provisions within the One Big Beautiful Bill. And it has 20 Title I commodities. Are the commodities eligible in that? It's based on 2025 planted acres and then a payment rate by crop per acre, depending on kind of what the economics, the calculation that we did related to economics pertaining to those crops. So, you know, soybeans, corn, you know, they're kind of in the low to mid range. Wheat is kind of in there as well. And you really see a ramp up in those payments per acre for rice and cotton. And it really has to do 100% with kind of where the economics of those commodities are right now. But kicked it off on the 23rd of February, you know, lots and lots and lots of response right out of the barrel. You know, we expect over 550,000 applications. The reason we were kind of stuck on that number is that's the number of folks that applied through the ECAP program that was done, you know, a year ago, and the farmers that will participate in FBA are probably the same farmers that participated in ECAP last spring. And we're, you know, we're 450,000 applications in, so certainly well on our way. And of the $11 billion, I think we're right at the $9 billion mark, either obligated or actually dollars in producers' accounts. And so so it's going very well, Tony. We're really happy with the response and how folks engaged on this program. And I think we're pretty happy with the way we deployed it. Different platform, you know, the form was pre-filled, it just required a signature from the producer to be able to initiate the application. And so really happy with a whole bunch of different parts of the Farmer Bridge Assistance Program.
Mark Meckler is president of the Convention of States.
I'll be honest with you, I have mixed feelings about that. I don't love big government programs just handing out money to farmers. I was on the phone, like I said, with my in-law, John, today. It was kind of funny. I called him, I told him I was doing this, and I just wanted to get some on-the-ground experience. So literally was out in the field, turned off the tractor to pick up my phone call and talk to me on the cell phone. And then we texted back and forth a few times. All the farmers and ranchers I know, they would prefer not to have to take assistance. These are proud people that work incredibly hard and they want to stand on their own two legs. That's not to say they're not taking the money, and it's not to say that they don't need the money right now, but they would rather not. These are very independent, conservative people. And so that was kind of his first position is, you know, we wish this didn't have to exist, but a lot of people are getting hammered right now. And I would say, especially over the last 4 years, when inflation is high, when regulations go up, when trade deals are not being struck by the administration, and we had that during the Biden administration, it's just sort of this pincher maneuver on the farmers that makes their lives very difficult. And I think that's what this Bridge Act is all about, to try to sort of not make up for all of it, because it's not going to, but to give them a bridge to healthier days.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Go back to 1985, the Farm Bill of 85 that created CRP.
Brad Lubin is a University of Nebraska ag economist. Looks at the Conservation Reserve Program.
It was really a confluence of at least two major interests that pushed it across the finish line. The CRP certainly has valuable conservation benefits, erosion reduction and control that reduces soil erosion. It improves air quality, improves water quality. It protects environmental resources. It provides wildlife habitat. So it has a number of different conservation and environmental benefits that society values at large. So conservation groups particularly really saw value in a program like the CRP. But recall it was also implemented in the mid-1980s when we were dealing with low farm incomes and concerns about low prices driven by excess supplies. Well, pulling land out of production was a key policy priority too. And so a conservation reserve program that might pull millions of acres out of production, it specifically required highly erodible cropland as the eligibility or criterion to be admitted. And so it pulled cropland out of production at a time when we were trying to manage excess production. So it was a combination of economic and environmental interests that really got us the Farm Bill to start with.
So that's the background on the Conservation Reserve Program. But why is a new Farm Bill vital for CRP?
The Farm Bill establishes the authority for the program in the first place and sets the enrollment cap. Those are two pieces that are authorized in the underlying Farm Bill legislation. So the CRP program authority lives from Farm Bill to Farm Bill. The cap itself has been set in previous, most recently in the 2018 Farm Bill. The cap was gradually increased to 27 million acres, and it sits there yet today. The Farm Bill is dependent upon, the CRP program is dependent upon a Farm Bill for authority going forward. We can serve existing contracts, but we can't enroll any new contracts absent Farm Bill authority. So when the 2018 Farm Bill expired in 2023, we effectively had a lapse in new CRP activity until they extended it for a year. Then it expired again in 24, and we had another lapse until they extended again into 25. Then, while many of the provisions of the Farm Bill were addressed in the budget reconciliation bill in 25, including much of the rest of the conservation title, the CRP was not addressed. And so it expired again in late 2025, and it was another one-year extension that continued that authority going forward. That's the authority that finally gave FSA the opportunity to open up CRP enrollment programs here most recently. So it relies on that Farm Bill authority. It wasn't included in the budget reconciliation bill last July because absent a change to the program enrollment cap, there wasn't a budget effect of reauthorizing the CRP. And since there wasn't a budget effect, it didn't fit in the budget reconciliation bill. It would not have been germane to the bill. That only affects things that changed budget spending levels. So it couldn't be included at the time, which meant that it's still living off of underlying Farm Bill authority. And that's the authority that we again face this year of trying to get the rest of the Farm Bill, or what's been called the skinny Farm Bill, to the finish line by September.
Brad Lubin, University of Nebraska Ag Economist. It's Agriculture Today.
Introducing the heavyweight champion of the livestock operation, Case IH Farmall Utility Series Tractors. Farmall Utility Tractors don't just outweigh the competition. They're engineered to distribute weight where it works, from the transmission, central housing, and axles to the differentials and final drives. So add some weight to your operation and go the distance with Farmall Utility Tractors.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
with Agriculture Today. Here's Tony St. James.
What we found, or at least this the survey is suggesting, is that perhaps producers are not just going to switch, but perhaps they're exaggerating that planned switch based on recent fertilizer cost.
Rich Nelson is chief strategist with Allendale. They conducted a survey recently on acreage intentions for producers. Says corn has good fundamentals, but beans potential.
You know, we can certainly say that there is a fundamental difference between these two crops and their ability to really change the general story. For corn, there are some positives, and we certainly have reduced USDA's prior view of ending stocks a little bit, and maybe some people could argue there might be a few more bushels left to take off, but corn for the old crop side is still kind of stuck in this general lightly oversupplied story. Now, for soybeans, especially in the second half of February, once we had that discussion of perhaps China doing a second round of buying, if they would have done that, that would have allowed that soybean balance sheet to tighten up enough to allow even another surge in soybean prices and moving them firmly into the 12s. So we had the potential to change that soybean story. Now that's maybe changed a little bit here. We have questions regarding that Chinese buy, number one. And on top of that, now we're discussing with articles, information like this survey, perhaps the acreage increase will be even just a little bit more. So number one, soybeans did have the chance to change their general narrative. Looks like that's kind of been taken away from us right now for the short term. So we're still left with hoping for Iran, crude, and other factors being secondary issues which could support us. And we're not quite sure yet about the biofuel policy, especially as it comes to corn. So we have a lot of things up in the air. We can't quite suggest that the corn story has fundamentally changed, but we did at one point flirt with that story for soybeans.
And then there's wheat.
So the good news is, as far as acreage side, we've got most of it solidified here as far as that winter wheat, which has been planted. And as a small reminder, this winter wheat number, which USDA gave us in January, in what's called that winter wheat seedings, that will be revised here on this March report, and it will be revised, believe it or not, again on that June acreage survey as well. So we're still finding a lot of questions, but at least for the winter wheat discussion, that at least has solved on the acreage side. Now, this brings us to spring wheat, which is a very unique story. And this year's story out of North Dakota is they're trying to not plant wheat at all, that spring product, and they're moving towards corn and soybeans for North Dakota specifically. So our message right now on this side is, number one, a light drop here for winter wheat. Number two, you mentioned the winter issues as far as dryness right now. Just over 50% of winter wheat areas are now currently in D1 through D4 droughts. So that's a concern. We have been concerned about the eastern corn belt, where soft red wheat, the Chicago contract, is at. But with the current forecast, maybe we'll receive a few extra rains. So Chicago is now kind of getting off the radar of concern. This leaves our two big questions: hard red wheat, which is not going to get any reprieve from this current dryness, and our questions about spring wheat, where we have a lot of concerns about actual acreage. One thing we found out with our acreage argument here, our survey suggested about 312,000 acres out of what is relatively a small crop. So based on the size of the crop, that's a pretty good decline here.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton, to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.